This morning, I want to take you back in time, almost 3,000 years ago, to the year 1020 BC, to an area of the world that sits to our east, that we know today as the Middle East, and share with you a truly unforgettable and amazing story. This story took place between two bordering and neighboring nations that could not get along, and for very, very good reason. Both of these nations operated, survived, and lived under two completely contrasting ideologies. On one hand, you had a country that believed, that were born and bred and raised to believe that they could conquer and take anything that they wanted, at any time that they wanted. These individuals were savages. They were warriors, and in many ways, they were godless. On the other side, you had a nation of people that were God-fearing. These people were moral. They were loving. They were about the family, and they weren't going to be pushed around. Well, this tension between these two nations continued to escalate, and it escalated to the point where they found themselves in war. And as the kings of both of these nations went, united their armies, they then marched toward the battle site. And the battle site that they found themselves at was one for their day that was very normal, but for us today would be considered to be unique. This battle site was a valley. And this valley had on the northern side a mountain range, and on the southern side another mountain range. And on this particular day, this group of savages, these warriors, moved towards the southern mountain, and they climbed that mountain to the top, overlooking the valley, waiting for their opposition. Then this group of God-fearing soldiers, with their king and the soldiers, moved to the northern mountain, climbed up that mountaintop, stood overlooking it, looking into the faces of their opposition across the valley. And they waited, and they prepared for the war that would ensue in the valley between them. Well, as these God-fearing men and their king stood overlooking the valley, out of the blue, something began happening that had never happened before. They saw across the valley, as best as they could, that all these soldiers from these warriors started just kind of shifting and moving out of the way, kind of like the parting of the Red Sea. And as they looked, all they could see because of the distance was this large object was moving through their midst, and they were thinking possibly, is this some type of contraption to attack us with? Or is this some tree? I mean, what is this thing? And as they continued to watch, as the object moved toward the front of the line, they recognized this was in no way a contraption or a weapon. This was a man. This was a massive man. He was a soldier. And this soldier then moved down the mountain into the valley. He walked out in the middle of the valley. When he was in the valley, he looked up at this king and his soldiers, and he started shouting at them and taunting them and saying something like this: "Who do you think you are to come against us? You, this day, need to find amongst yourselves your champion, your best. Send him down here to fight me for all the marbles, man to man. And if he beats me, if he kills me, we will be your slaves. But if I kill him, then you will forever be our slaves." And in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 11, the author records the reaction, the response of this God-fearing king and his soldiers as they look down on this massive giant man after his statement and after his challenge. In verse 11, he said this: "When Saul and all of Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid." They were terrified. You know, when you think about being terrified, being afraid, when was the last time you found yourself just completely overtaken by fear? You know, those times where you can't breathe, your heart tends to stop beating, and I don't mean like in the good way, but like it just quits beating. You go numb. Your life, if you will, flashes before your eyes. When was the last time you experienced something like that? Was it possibly when you had a close call in a car wreck? Or maybe some other type of accident? Was it maybe the movie you saw this past weekend where something out of the blue occurred to where you just were afraid and you can't believe you didn't have a heart attack and you survived the moment? Yeah, I mean, what was it? When was that last time you were absolutely terrified? You know, as I was considering this myself, I thought back to about 3.5, 4 years ago when my father and I were getting ready to take a trip to another state for a conference. And we had purchased tickets to fly on a plane because we're too lazy to drive, and plus they were cheap tickets. And so we ended up driving over to the Memphis International Airport. And as we drove over there, what we saw, what we experienced was that it was raining and it was raining something fierce. It was very, very challenging to see, to drive, much less, we thought, to fly. When we arrived at the airport, seemingly the pilots and everyone else that's involved in those decisions thought the same thing, so they delayed our flight. And we sat in the airport, which is always fun, isn't it, for an hour. But finally, they called us to board our plane. And so we made our way onto our plane. We found our seats. We strapped in, buckled down. And I was seated by the window, and I looked out the window, and I was thinking to myself, my goodness, it may be raining harder than it was before. But they ended up taxiing us out onto the runway. We lined up behind all the other planes that were delayed, including Federal Express planes, these massive planes. And as we waited our turn, I sat there, and it seemed like it was getting windier, and it was raining even harder. And I thought, oh my gosh. And so finally, it was our turn. And as the pilot pulled up to the starting point, he said, basically, strap in and hang on. And we began moving down the runway. And as we were moving down the runway, we gained speed, and finally the nose of the plane started tilting up, as it always has in my past experiences, and we found ourselves climbing into the air. And I thought, okay, we're good. But as the plane continued to climb, and as the wind beat against the plane, and the rain was pounding against the plane, something happened out of the blue that absolutely terrified me. And the best way I know how to describe it, my dad and I have discussed this along with some of the others that were seated beside us, is it was as if the plane in midair hit a wall and it just stopped and was hovering. Now, I don't know your past plane experiences, but I never felt this before. It was as if there was a headwind or something. And what we saw in those seconds that felt like literally an eternity was that this pilot began pushing the power toward the engines even louder. And you heard the engines just roaring. And roaring, and I'm sitting there, and I'm getting nauseated. Seriously, I'm scared. I'm thinking, okay, life is over, because this thing's going nowhere fast. And then finally, thankfully, I'm here to tell you today, is that wall, whatever it was, got out of our way, and the plane moved forward to a comfortable altitude, and we flew to our destination. Now, when I think about my experiences of terror or fear, and when you think about yours, one thing we all likely have in common is, and thankfully so, is that you do not encounter these types of experiences every day, do you? Thankfully. Thankfully, they're intermittent. They happen. But given the security of our nation, given the freedoms we have, given the jobs that most of us work, most of us do not endure life-threatening situations every day that leave us terrified. But you know where we all really are when it comes to life each and every day? Where we do live, what we do have in common, is that every one of us each day face particular insecurities and fears that we battle in our lives practically, don't we? We all do. We all battle those insecurities over maybe the way we look. We all battle the fears and insecurities over relationships, of losing people we care for. We all battle insecurities in our jobs at some level of possibly performing at a standard high enough to we can hold on to our jobs. We all battle insecurities and fear over possibly resources or money, having enough or not having enough. We all battle these insecurities and these fears in just a very, very practical way. But what I've found in my experience in my own life, and I've seen it, of course, in the lives of others, is that usually these insecurities and fears, when they start creeping into our lives, you know, it's those things that you just feel kind of gnawing in your gut. That's the best way I can describe them, is that usually the way we tend to deal with these in the beginning is we tend to try to ignore them. Just kind of act like they're not there. But eventually, after they continue to come back and they're persistent, we find ourselves moving from the ignoring stage into, okay, I'm going to kind of try to avoid or run away from them stage. But eventually, we all end up having to face our insecurities and our fears. Is that true? That we have to face them. We have to deal with them. And whether you want to believe this or not, I'm just going to go ahead and kind of give you the little knife right now, if y'all are okay with that. But this morning, what I'm convinced of is that many of us today are not dealing with our insecurities and fears in a healthy manner. We're dealing with them in a very, very unhealthy manner. And the reason why I know this is true is because in your interactions, in your relationships with friends, neighbors, coworkers, family members, and others, is as you get closer and closer to those individuals, what you find is that it's so easy for you to see into other people's lives their insecurities and their fears, isn't it? Now, you can't see them in the mirror, usually, but you see them in others. And oftentimes what we discover in looking into the lives of others is that in the midst of their insecurity, in the midst of their fear, you find that they are in some way or another trying to address their insecurities and fears, and in unhealthy ways. The people you work with that are scared to death to lose their jobs, and we've all probably bumped into people like this, that the way that they tend to try to compensate or address their insecurity and their fear is that they become more controlling at work. They can't receive constructive feedback. And they're always working longer and harder hours trying to stay on top of this thing that they believe could be taken from their grasp. You see this with relationships with people that are very insecure about losing people they care for. That the way that they try to address it is that they become more controlling in their relationships. Whether it's husbands with wives or wives with husbands or boyfriends and girlfriends or whatever. And not only do they do that, but they also are very, very jealous a lot of the time. You see people like this that have insecurities around money, where they always feel like they're going to run out of what they have or not have enough. And so as a result of that, they start hoarding everything they can. They don't enjoy what they have. And every one of us can look into each other's lives and see that, but we struggle seeing it in the mirror. And the reality is for all of us, in some area probably in our lives, we are in some way handling these insecurities and fears in an unhealthy manner. And this morning, what I want to do is I want to share with you what I believe biblically is an opportunity for us to glean and to learn from a story, the story of David and Goliath, how we are to see and how we are to approach our insecurities and fears in life. Now, likely, this story, as you've heard it communicated over the years, and we've all heard this story many times, haven't we? You've heard it mainly from the standpoint of inspiration. You've heard it possibly in locker rooms. Some of you that have played sports or have been coaches where you talk about you're facing the Goliath and you need to be like David and just go for it and take him down. The bigger they are, the harder they fall, right? You've possibly seen it with political parties, some of these grassroots movements, and they kind of take on this attitude of David. Sometimes you've heard it used as an analogy when small teams such as Princeton or others in the NCAA tournament take down a great team in the tournament. You've heard it in those ways. But you know, when you think about where you're at and where I'm at, if we're all, again, honest with ourselves about we have insecurities and we have fears, is that I don't really think that inspiration in these moments is what we need. And the reason why is because if you have a broken belief, a busted belief or foundation, in which you're already trying to handle your insecurities and fears through, if I inspire you to go do more of that, then it only makes things worse. But thankfully, I believe in this story, this well-known, amazing story, we're able to learn something by identifying with this, the people in this story that really we identify with the most. You see, the person you identify with the most in this story is not David. And I don't either. And the reason why is because David was absolutely confident, wasn't he? He had a lot of courage. The ones that we identify with most of the time, at least I find myself identifying with, are those soldiers and Saul that were absolutely terrified. Don't you? And you don't know what to do. But what these soldiers saw that happened right before them is in this story. As we identify with them and as we take in this story together this morning, here's what you're going to discover. You're going to discover, likely, this broken belief that you hold to, that they held to, and another character in this story held to. And then you're going to find the true source of where confidence comes from. The true way that we're to build our lives that's found in only one character in this story. You see, the story begins by the author in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 4, introducing the first character. And the first character that's brought out of the gate that is shown to us is a man named Goliath. And in verse 4, here's how they describe him. It says, "And there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits in a span. He had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. And the shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam. And his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. And his shield bearer went before him." You know what's very, very interesting about this description of Goliath? Is back in antiquity, whenever Hebrew writers would write history, they were very, very different from the way writers write today. Back in their day, typically when they would describe a person, they would do so with broad brushstrokes. They didn't give a lot of detail. In our day today, usually, and I just finished reading the book on Hunger Games, the first one, and I was blown away by the richness and the detail in every scene. But what you see here is that this Hebrew writer breaks away from the norm and gives great detail of Goliath. And here's what he says. Goliath was very, very tall. Now, scholars believe, and I'm just going to use this as an illustration if you are cool with this. Scholars believe Goliath, let's keep going, was somewhere at around 8 feet tall minimum, right here, and possibly all the way up to almost 10 feet tall. He's a big dude. Fairly big. The average Jewish man in their day was somewhere around 5'6", 5'7". Not only that, the armor that Goliath wore on his chest weighed 125 pounds. You put 125 pounds on me, I'm going to crawl. And this man strutted down a mountain without any problem. He had armor all over him. He had a javelin, he had a spear, he had a sword. And on his spear, it's descriptive and even stating the weight of the tip of the spear is 15 pounds. And so Goliath, a lot of detail is given to Goliath. Now here's what you need to know about Goliath. Is that when these guys, these soldiers and the king of Israel saw Goliath coming toward them, what did they do? They freaked out, right? Now why? Because, see, in their minds, the way that they believed, the way they were living, at least, was that true confidence, true courage, comes from the outside in. It's built upon your power. It's built upon your skill. It's built upon your strength. It's built upon your training. It's built upon all those things. And when they came into conflict with someone that was stronger, more powerful, smarter, and better trained than they were, they absolutely fell to pieces and they were defeated. And Goliath held to the same view. Because as Goliath went into that valley, he was confident, wasn't he? He was courageous. Because the way Goliath saw it was, is that I'm more powerful, I'm stronger, I have greater skill, and I'm a man, and no one can take me down. You see, for all of us today, where we get it wrong, the reason why we find ourselves in fear, the reason why we find ourselves insecure and battling through these things is because we, like these soldiers, like Goliath, we have a view that confidence is to be gained from the outside in. And as a result of that, whenever someone in our life is more powerful, bigger, or better, we crumble. Or whenever we are bigger, badder than someone else, we become a little cocky and arrogant. And we see this in this story. You move on from this point, and after he expresses the fear, this author then records that another guy comes into the story by the name of David, the son of Jesse. And David was a shepherd's boy. He was out, he would shepherd sheep out in the flock, take care of them. And David is introduced as being sent by his dad to this war site, this battle site, for the purpose of taking food to his older brothers and also to get a little note to bring back to his dad as to what was taking place. Well, after David drops off all the food, he goes to visit his brothers. And while visiting with his brothers, he hears this massive beast of a man, Goliath, on day 40, okay, 40 days of this, walking into the valley and shouting out his challenge. And when David heard this, David responds to those around him, who does this Philistine think he is? To defy the armies of who? The living God. And then he turned and he asked the guys, he says, if someone goes and takes him down, what will they get? What's the king willing to give them? Well, after David had these conversations, seemingly word started spreading. Because after 40 days of no one being interested in going into the valley to fight Goliath, for one little guy to come up and start challenging and asking the questions, this word began spreading and it got to the ears of Saul. And in chapter 17, verse 31, look with me at what happens next. It says, when the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul and he sent for him. And then David said to Saul, watch this is awesome. Let no man's heart fail him fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Don't you love it? David, all 5'7", probably 130 pounds, walks in, looks at Saul, and he says, Saul, you got nothing to worry about because I'm here now. And when he said this, literally, Saul looks at him, I'm sure, from head to toe, and is thinking to himself, wow, this dude's also extremely confident. And look at how he replies in verse 33. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth. And he has been a man of war from his youth. Saul responds to David. He says, David, you don't have a chance. He'll slaughter you. I don't know if any of you have seen the Avengers yet, and I will not give this part away. But all you need to look for is that scene with the Hulk and what he does to someone. But that's probably what this guy had in mind, what he was going to do to David. Is you don't have a chance, man. You walk out there, he will absolutely destroy you. And I love what David says and what he does next in verse 34. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father, which Saul's probably thinking, I know. It's very evident. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and I struck him and I killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God. And then watch what David says next. This is everything. This means everything. And David said, the Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, will deliver me from the hands of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, as he got caught up in the moment, go and the Lord be with you. You see, the contrast between Goliath and the contrast between he and David was this. Goliath had the outside-in approach of courage and confidence. Both of them were very courageous and confident guys. Goliath was all based on external factors, power, training, skill. David's was built on inside out. For David, it was found in God. And what's so interesting is that this view that David had is the one that most of us do not have today when we're really honest and think about it, the way we live. Most of us lean towards the view of Goliath, or if you will, the view of those soldiers and Saul, that when they assessed the situation, they looked at David and said, you have no right to be confident. You have no reason to be courageous. But when they looked at Goliath, they thought, you have every right and every reason to be confident. And this is where we sit. One is a false sense of confidence, guys, that is absolutely prevalent even in our society today, the Goliath form of confidence. And what we find is the reason why so many of us stay bound up in our insecurities and our fears is because we believe like Goliath. If I can become stronger, if I can get more powerful, if I can get more skill, if I can get more money and all these things, then I'll feel secure. And the reality is, no, you won't. Because likely you'll bump into someone who has more and it makes you feel more insecure. Or if you do, like Goliath, you'll see in a minute what your outcome will probably be. The true form of security, this true form of confidence that we're to build in our foundation upon is what David said. It's God. It's not us. It's God. As David, I'm sure Saul looks at him and says, go and let the Lord be with you. David probably turned and started running out of this tent. And then Saul goes, oh, time out. Come here. He said, you can't go out there like that. He grabs his armor, right? Puts his armor on him. Puts a hat on him. Gives him his shield. David looks at it. Saul was a lot taller than David. David says, this doesn't fit, and I'm not even used to this, dude. I've got to be me. I can't do this. I can't roll like that. And Saul was thinking, okay, tried to warn you. Takes it off. He goes out. He collects 5 smooth stones. Puts him in his little satchel, takes his sling. And in verse 41, we pick back up in the story and look at what happens. It says, and the Philistine moved forward, came near to David and his shield bearer in front of him. And the Philistine looked, he saw David, and he disdained him. In essence, he was insulted that this little runt was coming toward him. He said, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And then watch what Goliath does. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog? Seriously? Are you coming out here to play fetch? That you would come to me with sticks. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine made this statement to David. And look at the confidence of this Philistine, of Goliath. Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field. And then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but here's the difference between you and myself. I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. David contrasts himself to Goliath as to where his confidence comes from. Goliath says, I'm coming to you with all these weapons, with all this power, with all my skill, and I'm going to kill you. I'm going to destroy you. And David said, hey, you come to me like that, but here's how I come to you. It's very, very different. My confidence is built, is secure in God. Not any of that. And then we see the consequence, the result. Here's what David goes on to say. He said, this day, not day 41, but today, right now, the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. Sounds nice, doesn't it? And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth. And all the earth that will know that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly, all these soldiers that are watching this happen, and the king and others may know that the Lord saves, not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. You have to love it that David told Goliath, you're resting on that for your security, your confidence, and you're one arrogant sucker. And my security, my confidence rests only in God. And I trust him. And this day, this will show the world, this will show everyone that's looking, God saves, God delivers, God does things that in many cases absolutely boggles the mind as we look outwardly and cannot see a reason why it would happen that way. As soon as David makes this statement, David runs to the battle line. He sets himself up. He gets his little satchel, pulls out a smooth stone, wraps it in that sling. He slings it. One shot. Pops Goliath in the head, the forehead, sinks into his forehead. Goliath falls down right on his face. David walks over to Goliath. He doesn't have a sword in hand. He takes the sword out of the sheath of the giant. He doesn't check to see if he's breathing. He doesn't care. He takes the sword and he removes the giant's head. And David wins. And after this happens, all these Philistines that were watching were freaked out. They could not believe it. Despite all the odds against David, he defeated the giant. And they fled. And all these Israeli soldiers and their king were like, what? And then they got up and they chased them down, right? And took them out. You see, when you think about your life, guys, the point of this message this morning, and my hope and my heart behind it is this, is when you think about your life, is that every one of us, right where we are seated, truly do carry around insecurities and fears. And many times, we don't really understand the insecurities and fears of each other. That's why a lot of times we judge each other. Right? Because we don't struggle with that. We struggle with something else that we're running from or ignoring. And, you know, so we judge each other, make ourselves look better and feel better. But the reality is we all struggle with them. We're all weak. We're all fragile. And in this life, you really have two different foundations that you can truly seek courage and confidence for your life. And it's either in outward things or it's with God. David and Goliath is the greatest story I've ever seen. That I know of, that clearly contrasts the two. It shows you where it leads you. What Goliath learned that day, I believe, is also found in a verse that was written by David's son, Solomon, in Proverbs 16:18, where he says this, and you've all heard it. Let's put it on the screen. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Isn't that right? Practically speaking, Goliath was very, very haughty and arrogant. Possibly even to the point when he approached David, he was thinking, oh my gosh, I should have packed a lunch. right? And he left himself wide open, and he was destroyed. But you see, David knew something else. David knew something that Paul told Timothy in his second letter to him when Timothy was struggling in his youth and pastoring a large, large church and a lot of challenges that were taking place, is that in 2 Timothy 1:7, Paul wants to encourage Timothy, and he said this to Timothy. For God gave us a spirit, and the belief here is the spirit word here is the Holy Spirit. Not of fear, but of, say the word with me, power and love and self-control. You see, the Spirit of God, if you're a follower of Jesus today, the Spirit of God that dwells within you is not a spirit of fear. He's a spirit of power and love and self-control. David, in the chapter before what we read, was ordained as the next king of Israel by Samuel. And David, it says, was ordained and he was, the Spirit of God came upon him. And this, if you will, confidence David had came from the Spirit within him. And far too many of us are living like those Israeli soldiers who knew the right things, knew about the living God that they fought for, but we're not living a life like David. Too many of us have our eyes set on outward and external things that bring us confidence versus the inward. And David had his heart focused and fixed on God, and internally the Spirit gave him power so that he could go and deal with his fear, which was not a fear really, but deal with life in a confident way as God led him. This past week, as I was preparing for this talk, and you have to love how God works sometimes, I found myself, like I do pretty much every week, dealing with pressure. And we all have different pressures, don't we? But the pressure I have that I deal with every week is trying to put together a talk that I can at least keep you awake with for about 30 minutes, okay? And I battle that. And see, in my personality type, I really struggle with the insecurity of being a perfectionist. I want everything to be just perfect. And so I really, really, really battle. You can ask my wife, you can ask Eddie and a few others. I struggle with this. But this past week, as I was really working through that and working on this message, of course, God just really hit me. He said, Jonathan, look, this insecurity you have, this fear, this pressure you have about Sundays, it's not for me. It's all you, buddy. And it's normal. And you can give in to it. And you can try to gain your confidence and your security by working harder and really stressing over it and trying to be the perfect this and that. Or you can come to me, humble yourself before me, and let me give you the confidence, the security, the courage, if you will, to fight through this insecurity. And you know, that's what God has for all of you in your own life, in your own way, in your own context, whatever you're battling through. God really, really wants for you to find your courage, your strength, your confidence in Him, and not seek to find it outwardly. That's the life He has for you. Let me pray for us. Father, I love you. God, I thank you for your grace. I thank you, God, that each and every one of us, as we sit here today, as we reflect, as we're honest, God, we are all fragile, we're all insecure, we're all needy in so many ways. And God, the lure, the lie that we are drawn towards so often is to try to find our security and confidence in ourselves, to look to ourselves. And Father, what we continue to see in our own lives and we see in the lives of others is that usually when that happens, we end up hurting others or hurting ourselves, or both. And so Father, I pray that for all of us today that God, by your Spirit within us, that you would begin opening our eyes and our hearts to see that it's not found in power, it's not found in skill or money or success, it's only found in you. And Lord, I pray that you would humble our hearts, but God, that you would give us that peace that we're all searching for, that security that we're all looking for. It's in Jesus' name that I pray. Amen.